So I'm just stalling. Welcome to the first of our series on Shabbat. Yes. So I'm debating between two stories to open with about Shabbat. And I may share both. The first is a story that I saw on the internet a few years ago. And I'm just going to have to read it because it just says everywhere. As I settled into my seat on flight 1272 bound for Chicago, I glanced at the passengers filing down the aisle. My Jew radar immediately went off, in addition to the business travelers toting their laptops and briefcases, and the pleasure travelers wearing shorts and Walkmans. How long ago is this? I spied several suede kippot, a strimal, and ankle-length skirts. Nice. Welcome, everyone. Despite our shared heritage, I didn't bother acknowledging them. They were strangers. And I live in New York, where strangers seldom exchange greetings, even if they recite the same prayers. Plane rolled down the runway. I waited for takeoff. No such luck. The pilot announced that the flight was being delayed for 3 hours due to stormy weather conditions. Chicago. I glanced at my watch nervously. Usually I avoid flying Friday afternoons for fear I won't arrive in time. But on summer weekends, when Shabbat doesn't begin till 8 p.m., I figured I'd be safe. I figured wrong. But I calculated that I could just make it if I didn't claim my luggage, jumped into a taxi. I turned around to check on my co-religionists. Two kippot were examining their watches. The chassid was on the airphone. A half hour before arrival, the pilot announced O'Hare Airport was shut down and we were landing in Milwaukee until we could continue on. My stomach sunk. Candlelighting was an hour away. I'd never make it on time. Like most religious Jews who work in the secular world, I'd experienced my share of close calls, but I never knowingly violated the Sabbath. Now I was stuck. By now, the kippot and long skirts were huddled in the back of the plane. They had been joined by others. Shabbat was bringing strangers together. It was my time to introduce myself. Do you know this? Have you heard this? Oh. Anyone else have heard this? I love this. We're going to get off in Milwaukee, a young man told me. The chassid had called Milwaukee's Chabad rabbi, who offered to host any stranded passengers for Shabbat. Come with us, he urged. I nodded with relief, but returned to my seat crestfallen, since I had planned this weekend with my family for months. My non-Jewish seatmate, noticing my despair, inquired what was wrong. When I told him the story, his jaw dropped. Let me get this straight, he said. You're getting off the plane in a town where you've never been, with people you don't know, to stay overnight with complete strangers. For the first time that day, it occurred to me just how lucky I was. When the plane landed, the pilot announced we were disembarking first for religious reasons. That they were getting off first, because religious reasons. Passengers stared at us, dumbfounded. My seatmate bid me farewell as if he didn't think I would survive. But I quickly realized I was among friends. As I attempted to carry my bags off the plane, a woman insisted on helping me. When we crowded into cabs to take us to the rabbi's house, the chassid insisted on paying for me. And when the cabs pulled up at the home of the rabbi in the Rebbetzin, they ran outside to greet us, as if we were long-lost relatives. The sun set on Milwaukee as they ushered us into their home, where a long table was set for Shabbat with a white tablecloth, china, and gleaming Kiddush cups. When I lit the Shabbat candles, a wave of peace washed over me. With all that had transpired, I was warned by the notion that the world stops with the first flicker of the Sabbath light. Over a traditional Shabbat feast, the rabbi enchanted us with tales of the Baal Shem Tov, that was the founder of the Hasidic movement from the 1700s, informed us that our reroute to Milwaukee was due not to the world of weather, but of divine providence. We lingered over our meal, enjoying our spiritual sanctuary in time after the stressful days. Mirot, Shabbat songs filled the room. We shared disappointments about our unexpected stopover. Most of the group was traveling to Chicago for their friend's Ufruf. What's an Ufruf? It's the groom's, like, Shabbat before he gets married, calling up to the Torah before the wedding, and a wedding. So most of the group was traveling for the Ufruf and a wedding, and were missing the Ufruf. The chassid and his wife were missing a bar mitzvah. We pondered the meaning of the departure from our journey and marveled at the coincidences. I had attended camp with my roommate. A couple had conducted business with my father. A man had studied in yeshiva with my cousin. The chassid used to work in my hometown of Aurora. Help. In Illinois, A-U-R-O-R-A. Thank you, Illinois. And I'd once spent Purim in Crown Heights with my host's son. Exhausted as we were, everyone was hesitant to leave the table to go to sleep. The next morning, a lively tefillah, prayer, service was followed by a leisurely meal where we exchanged stories about our lives, careers, and dreams. We nicknamed ourselves the Milwaukee 15 and wondered if future generations would retell the story of the flight that didn't make it in time for candlelighting. Saturday night, we made a regretful journey to the everyday world. But before we began the final leg of our journey, I called my husband to tell him all that had transpired. "Who'd you spend Shabbos with?" he asked worriedly. I pondered how to explain who these former strangers were, who had given me object lessons in Shabbat hospitality and in the power of Shabbat in bringing Jews together. And then as swiftly as a 747 can leave the tarmac on a clear day, I realized the truth. Miles away from my parents, husband, and home, I had accomplished what I set out to do when I booked my ticket. I'd spend Shabbat with family. So beautiful, huh? That was debating between, isn't that sweet? Between that story, you don't think it's sweet? or the story that I'm starting my Shabbat chapter on in my book that I'm writing. And it's this, but just much quicker. And this happened in Israel, 6 p.m. on Friday. Highway 1. Has anyone been on Highway 1 in Israel? Okay, it's the main highway leading to Jerusalem, Tel Aviv. I'm sure we were on it. It's a multi-car collision. Traffic, complete stop. No one was, thank God, seriously hurt, but they were about a half a mile away from the closest community. So literally dozens of Sabbath observant Jews pulled their cars off on the shoulder of the highway. It's Shabbos. They started taking their belongings out, started walking to the, where they were told about a half a mile away there's the closest Jewish community off the highway. It was called Geva Binyamin. Some continued further to Psagot. I had a friend who lived in Psagot and Kochav Yaakov, several kilometers down the road. And it was an unbelievable thing that within an hour, over 100 families, that's a few hundred people, were placed in homes for Shabbos. Not one person was left without a place to sleep or eat any of the three meals of the Sabbath. So I wanted to start with these sweet little stories and ask you what compels a family to leave their car with all their belongings on the side of the road and spend Shabbat with a complete stranger or break family plans that you've made for months to go to the middle of nowhere to some Chabad rabbi's house that you don't even know who he is. What is it about Shabbos that inspires such sacrifice and such lengths to which, you know, I would say our ancestors, but so many Jews today, I tried to give you like modern real stories of people today doing this, you know? So I want to share, just I want to open up and just ask you the question, why is Shabbos so fundamental? And can anyone give me some indications of why Shabbat observance is so fundamental to being Jewish? What do we know about Shabbos that makes it so, like, it's like one of the quintessential Jewish things that we do is observing Shabbat? First of all, it's one of the Ten Commandments. Now, I'm not trying to imply that just because something made it into the Big Ten, that they're any more important than the other 603. Okay? They're really categories, I believe, under which the other 603 fall, but it is in the Big Ten. Sabbath observance is the only distinction in the Talmud mentioned between different Jews. There's nothing in the Talmud about conservative, reform, and Orthodox Jews. There's nothing in the Talmud about Ashkenazi or Sephardi Jews. There's nothing in the Talmud. The only thing the Talmud distinguishes between two types of Jews, Jews who keep the Shabbos and Jews who don't keep the Shabbos. Throughout the 2,771 folios of Talmud, that's the only distinction ever made between Jews. And although we tend to think of Shabbat as a day of rest from the rest of the week, the Kabbalah, Jewish mystical tradition, teaches Shabbat is not for the weekdays. A lot of people think, oh, it's such a good thing, I'm going to rest, I'm going to feel better the rest of the week. Every boss in this world should command you to keep the Shabbos, you'll be a more efficient worker the rest of the week. No. The weekdays are for the sake of Shabbos. As we're going to read in a minute, the Sabbath is the inspirer, Abraham Heschel said. The other day is the inspire. Shabbos sets the stage for the rest of the week. Talmud tells us that if every Jew kept two Shabboses, the Mashiach would have to come. It does not, by the way, there's a song called Just One Shabbos and the Love. Mordechai Ben David, my time, you shouldn't know it, it's okay. But he got it wrong, it's not just one Shabbos, it's two Shabboses. But it doesn't say that about, you know, we were going to talk about keeping kosher, very important too, or praying, or doing anything else. It only says it about Shabbat, that if every Jew kept two Sabbaths, the Messiah would come. And Rabbi Dan, in his book, To Be a Jew, and you should all get it and read it, he said, no other commandment in the Torah receives such expressions, descriptions of affection and devotion as the Shabbat. It's the only observance which is personified in the religious poetry of the prayers. In fact, how do we refer to Shabbos on Friday night? As a bride, and also as a queen. Because the Kabbalah teaches the feminine aspect of God is revealed on Friday night, and the masculine on Shabbat day, which is Friday night, why we sing the Eshet Chayil, which is why we have these references in the prayers in the Kabbalat Shabbat service, if you guys have been to FNL, and if not, you should start coming, it's awesome, to the Sabbath queen, to the Shabbat bride. And it's interesting also, and I'll end with this, if you had to pick one mitzvah in Judaism that's responsible for more Jews coming back to their Jewish roots, or more Jews losing their Jewish roots, Shabbos. It's always Shabbos. Shabbos is the usual, God forbid, breaking off point. When someone says, I'm no longer keeping Shabbos, that's usually the beginning of the end. And keeping Shabbos is, hands down, if you surveyed 1,000 Baalei Tshuva in the world, hands down, Shabbos was probably the way in. So my question is, what is it about Shabbat that is so fundamental?
Okay.
Lauren.
It brings you together. It brings, like, you don't have the distractions of everyday things that you can kind of channel into each other.
So because we sort of are trying to block out the world and technology, the kind of, what's the word? The kind of interactions that we have on Shabbat, somebody else, thank you. So the interactions that we have on Shabbat are more meaningful, you know?
Like, I mean, that moment, like you were just describing that story, that would have never happened in any other circumstance.
It couldn't have happened because we would have figured out another way of getting to where we need to go. And if we can do all the things that sometimes are difficult for us to refrain from doing on Shabbat, we probably wouldn't have that kind of peace of mind. But there are sacrifices that are made to do this. There's a story of Rabbi Jonathan Sacks. You've all heard of Rabbi Jonathan Sacks. He was the chief rabbi of Great Britain. He brought a woman by the name of Penelope Leach, who was one of the BBC's head reporters, into a Jewish school on Friday. And when you go into a Jewish school on Friday, like little kids, what do they usually see? You see like little kids, 5-6-year-olds playing Shabbos,
yeah.
You know? So she came into this little classroom, like little 6-7-year-olds, and there was like a fake Abba and a fake Ima, and the Abba had like a long tie on, and the Ima had like a kerchief around, and she was doing this and like lighting the candles, and it was like a very sweet, and she's not a Jewish woman, she was like, what is this? And he starts explaining, you know, tonight is our Shabbat. And so, and anyway, he introduced her to the class, and she's like, what do you guys think about Shabbat? So this little boy blurts out, he goes, I can't watch TV on Shabbos. He's like annoyed because she asked, you know, he's like 5-6-year-old. So she said, oh, I'm sorry to hear that. She says, my parents won't let me watch TV on Shabbos. So then, and she says, she like kneels down and says, and what's your favorite thing about the Sabbath? And she says, Daddy doesn't have to rush off. I mean, it's like British, rush off, you know? And she then said to, she spent like the whole day in the school, and she said that Shabbos is probably saving a lot of these kids' parents' marriages. You know, because if you don't have a day where you're almost forced to have like a blackout, it's very, very difficult to kind of just do that on our own. Now, okay, Lauren gave one answer. What else? Yeah.
So much of Judaism is based around elevating the mundane into something more spiritual and something that's not in the physical world with us. And that's, I think, exactly what Shabbat does. While people think you're actually losing out on not being able to go to, you know, brunch with your friends or watch like a game on TV or go and travel somewhere and like go all the way like downtown or to Brooklyn, that there's so much more that you actually can do. It's not just about resting and be like, oh, but you have to walk somewhere. That's not it. It's about a different type of rest. Oh. It's a much more higher and elevated rest.
Okay, so let's talk about that for a little. You said it beautifully. It's actually in the Kiddush. Because we say, Vayichul HaShemayim V'aretz V'chotzam, that God finished creating the world on what day? Does the Torah say God finished creating the world? The seventh. It should really say, oh, what? It should say he finished creating on the sixth. What did God do on the seventh? He rested. But the Torah doesn't say that. It says he finished creating on the seventh, implying he created something on the seventh. So this is a little of a different understanding of the concept of rest. And we're going to talk about this more when we get to the Melachot in a couple of weeks. The Melachot are the things we don't do on Shabbat. Rest is not understood in the Torah as, what's rest? Rest is like, I'm going to not do something so I can rest from all the stuff I was doing. It's like a state of inactivity. And it's peaceful, it's restful, it's tranquil, but that's not the rest that the Torah is telling us to try to do. Rest is a state of rest between the physical and the spiritual worlds. Because according to the Kabbalah, the physical and the spiritual are at odds all week long. They're always clashing up against each other. Even within us, there's a physical part, our body, which sometimes rubs up against the spiritual part of who we are. And we're constantly trying to find that peace and that tranquility amidst all of the hustle and bustle. One day of the week, the physical and the spiritual line up to come together, because what do we do a lot of on Shabbos? There's actually a lot of physical enjoyment that we gain on Shabbos. What's it called? What's that Hebrew word that we use to express the physical enjoyment on Shabbos, which is more of a spiritual, but it's also physical? It's like eating special foods. Oneg. It's singing. What's that?
Oneg.
It's called Oneg. Oneg means rejoicing. Have you been to an Oneg Shabbos? So we use that word just to talk about like a little social that we're getting. But we're actually supposed to partake of the physical world, but in a way that's supposed to somehow create some kind of spiritual connection with the physical. See, the goal in Judaism is not to escape. Everyone always asks me, like, what is the difference between Buddhism, which is a very attractive religion, and Judaism? Because we're very much into the soul and connecting with the soul. But the goal is not to escape the physical world. The goal in Buddhism is transcendentalism, which is a tool in Judaism. But the ultimate goal of Judaism is not transcendentalism, it's holiness. Holiness, as far as Torah is concerned, is achieved when you sanctify the physical, not leave the physical. The goal is not to meditate on some mountaintop so you can't be in the physical world. The goal is to bring a little of God, heaven, spirituality into physicality. And we do that more on Shabbos than any other day of the week. So it's important to eat on Shabbos. It's important to sing on Shabbos, to take a walk on Shabbos, to be alive physically on Shabbos. But we do it in a way that's supposed to inspire, sanctify, and elevate the physical world. And it's kind of celebrating this harmony that exists. Now, you may not feel it, because you walk in the street on a Saturday, it feels like you walk in the street on a Tuesday. But to the degree that we insert and we introduce spirituality into physicality is the degree that Shabbos can really be rest. If it's just rest, like you're just going to crash. Yeah, I'm exhausted, I'm going to crash, and I'll be ready to go again on Monday morning. It's not the goal of Shabbos. That's not the goal. Maybe that's the goal of Sunday. And I'll tell you one other thing, very practical level. People always say to me, Sundays sometimes could be the least relaxing, sort of least tranquil day of harmony. Because, you know, mowing the lawn, going to the mall, doing whatever it is, I'm not saying it's stressful. But it's not connecting with your deeper self, necessarily. Now, the letters of the Hebrew word Shabbat, Shin, Bet, Tav, I want you to remember this. What do they spell? Shabbat. They're also the word Shevet. What are we doing right now? We're all sitting. La Shevet means to sit, because the world was sitting. All week long, this tension, physical and spiritual. One day of the week, there's no more struggle. The physical and the spiritual sit down together. Okay, and personally, I find this much deeper than the restful feeling, you know, even going on a vacation. It's just different. Open up your packets now. I want to show you a verse from the Torah. I gave you guys two packets. Forget that. Yeah, you can read that story on your own. Actually, this packet here, not the one that says the Sabbath on top. This one over here. Oh, Thank you.
You're welcome.
We're going to page 2. Yeah. This packet right here, guys. And it's page 2. You can read the story on page 1 on your own time.
I only saw my question in the chat, but I thought I would just flag it out in case it's no longer relevant after we move on. It's about the tension between sitting and walking.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. If there is any explanation or any discussion there.
About sitting or walking? No, there are like different things that we can do, and I'm going to try to get into them tonight a little. Different things we can do as fulfillments of Oneg Shabbos. So taking a peaceful walk is considered a very Shabbos kind of thing to do. Not like a hard hike or run, but a walk.
No, sorry, can I interject? I think I could clarify my question. It's not about the act of walking. It's about the fact that Jewish law as a whole is called Halakha. And that grew, as we discussed last week, is about how to walk. And yet, when we actually abide by Jewish law, we're sitting, so to speak, one day out of the week for 25 hours.
That's very interesting. But you hear what Harry's suggesting? We talked about halacha last week. It's the way the Jew walks. So one day a week, we stop walking. It's very poetic and nice, except it doesn't work because Shabbos, we're also following halacha. We're still walking. You know what I'm saying? But the way we walk on Shabbos is to sit, if you will. You know what I'm saying? The way we operate on Shabbat is to chill out. But to chill out in a way that somehow bridges and brings the physical and spiritual worlds together. Okay. Now, the Torah offers 2 reasons to keep the Shabbos. Does anybody know, even before you look down, what's the reason the Torah gives us to keep Shabbos? It doesn't say anything we've said before until now.
The reason that
God commanded us to observe the Sabbath. Well, actually, we mentioned one a little. Famous one. We say it in the Kiddush. Well, yeah, but it doesn't really say to elevate. What's that?
Sanctify the
Because God did what?
Because
God created the world in 6 days and rest on the seventh. We should work and create and do everything we're supposed to do during the 6 days and then rest on the seventh as well. Okay?
Thank you.
One day we'll get better technology than this three-hole puncher. It's like... All right, so take a look at the first. It says creation. Anybody want to read that? Just read the verse. Anybody? Anybody here? You want to read English? Amen. Right here, it says creation. Just read that in 6 days.
For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and the earth, the sea and all that is in them, and rested on the seventh day. Therefore God blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it.
Okay, good. Now, that makes sense, right? God creates. What about the second reason given? Keep reading and remember.
And remember that you are a slave in the land of Egypt, and the Lord your God brought you out from there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore did God your God command you to observe the Shabbat.
Okay, now what does that have to do with keeping Shabbos? That we were slaves in Egypt, and now we're free? Like, what does that have to do with keeping Shabbos?
We don't have to work.
Okay, good. As a slave, your time is not your own. In fact, what was the first commandment given to the Jewish people as a nation?
I'm your God.
Oh, that was the first of the 10 commandments when he assembled them at Har Sinai, but they actually got a mitzvah before they were assembled. Does anybody know the first mitzvah chronologically that the Jews as a nation got?
Was it not Mishnah?
I'm sorry?
No, it wasn't Mishnah.
You mean Lecha Mishnah, double loaf? No, that's rabbinic. What was that? Be fruitful, multiply. That was the first commandment ever given to Adam.
Yeah.
To an individual, wasn't given to the nation. It became part of the Torah later. Okay, we try to have children because of that verse. The first mitzvah was given, the mitzvah of Rosh Chodesh. What's Rosh Chodesh? To sanctify the new month. Because what does that mean? It's exactly what Fred, what you just said. Because we control our own time. When you're a slave, you can't control your own time. So God gave him a mitzvah to sanctify time. That's okay. And to... if you don't like what I said, you just kick me. My wife does it all the time. She kicks me under the table. I can't believe you said that. I'll take it back. I'm not taking it back. I really believe what I said.
Just a brain. What?
What was that? Somebody?
Pull up the chat.
What?
You don't have the sidebar chat?
Why, are you curious about what he said?
No, just click it. Click the chat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Click.
I'm clicking.
Other side, other side of the mouse.
I think do the left side of the... Do you want me to...
Yeah, you do.
The chat sidebar is missing, guys.
Okay.
Okay, just a brain that enjoys eating rats... Okay.
What did he say?
Just a brain that enjoys eating rats. I hope you're happy with all this derailment of our stuff.
We're getting into it.
This is fun. There's like a whole other world going on here. I'm not even aware. I'm too busy getting kicked under the table. I'm just kidding. It wasn't really that bad.
I kicked my rabbit. My bat mitzvah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So give me another reason. What is getting? Yeah, please.
So were you talking about separating like time and separating time and space?
I haven't, but if you'd like to suggest that,
okay.
I'm asking you. Fred was answering why is the Torah giving? I get these 6 days God created and rested, so you do the same thing. We're supposed to imitate God. That's all religious people try to imitate God. It's a famous Latin term. It's imitatio Dei, copy God. Fine, but what does Exodus from Egypt have to do? So time is one issue. What's another issue? What else do we see? What else is it about the Exodus from Egypt that is related to observing Shabbat? It's not as direct, it's not so simple.
So that we came to Israel?
We eventually got to Israel, okay.
Oh, was it the man in the desert?
The man fell down. What does that have to do with Shabbos?
Double portion on Friday.
Okay, now you're getting into the little details of Shabbos. We'll get to that soon, okay, yeah.
But
keep throwing it out, this is good.
In Egypt, we're in slavery, which... obviously now we're not, but there's a different form of slavery, which is our everyday lives.
Okay, so that's another way of putting it. It's like a very rabbinic homiletical explanation. It's like the humdrum of our everyday lives. Like, we think we're free. We took the job. Nobody put a gun to our head. We wanted the money. We wanted the prestige. It was a good stepping stone in our career. But do we feel enslaved to our work or to some other force in life? But here's the other thing. Here's the major theological idea of the Exodus. The Exodus was the first time that we ever saw God do what?
Reveal himself.
Reveal himself how? For who? For an entire people who was oppressed, who cried out to him, demonstrating our belief in what kind of God?
None. There was one God.
I don't know if that expresses our belief in one God. There are other things that express the unity or oneness of God. God's power. That's true.
No, God, like our God. Yeah, like God for us. Like,
well, we believe God's God for all humanity, but he paid attention to us, and therefore he's what kind of God? Right. Not everyone believes in a personal God. What do I mean by personal God? Like, they call it the God of Spinoza. Einstein believed in the God of Spinoza. I just wrote a whole book about Benedict Spinoza. Fascinating individual. Which means he didn't believe in free will, and he didn't believe that God... He believed God created the universe. Einstein believed in the God of creation. But he didn't believe that that same God continues to have anything to do with the world. It's like the watchmaker who creates a beautiful watch, sets it on, and takes off. What is our belief? We don't only believe in a one God. We believe in a...
Intervening
God. Now, it gets tricky... because we don't always understand why God intervenes here and why not there. Why in the Exodus and maybe not in the Holocaust. But I can prove to you that most people do believe in an intervening God. Because you know why? If people didn't believe in intervening God, then the most often asked question about the Holocaust would never be asked, which was, where is God? Because you could just say, that's not who God is. God's a creator, and then he leaves you with a mess of existence. But we don't believe that. We believe God actually is listening to our prayers. I believe that God actually knows my name, is taking an accounting of my life, and that's why I try to live up to my potential, because I want God to be proud of me like a parent. Like, if I didn't believe in all that, I wouldn't be asking questions like, why is God not answering my prayers? Why is God silent in the face of horror, of suffering, of tragedy? I'm not saying everybody believes that, but that is a fundamental belief of Judaism. Which is that we don't subscribe only to a God of creation, but also to a God of history. The Exodus was the first time in history. Please remember this idea when we get closer to Passover. It's a great thing to share at your Seder table. Now, this comes with a lot of problems and issues, because it's like, I can tell you I believe in a God of history, but I can't tell you why sometimes he intervenes and brings plagues down on our enemies, and sometimes he's quiet. I don't know. But I still believe that he's listening and he's caring. And when we're going to talk about this when we get to prayer in a few weeks also. Right? Because just because God didn't answer a certain prayer doesn't mean he wasn't listening. Like my kids used to do that when they were little. Like when I conjured up the confidence and the guts to say no to one of my children, like a total wuss with them. When they were little, I was like, oh, sure. And once in a while I would say, like, no, that's not good for you. What would they say always? You're not listening. And then I used to start repeating what they were asking for, so they knew I was listening. They can know I heard them, but your mother and I still don't think it's a good idea. We do the same thing. God must not be listening if I'm not getting what I asked for. After all, look how legitimate this ask is. From our perspective, it's totally legitimate. Just like a 5-year-old. You have all the candy. I like candy. Give me candy. So why would you withhold all this candy? You're just mean and cruel. Because parents are privy to a whole other wisdom and other circumstance factors that the children are not. And that's the way we almost look at ourselves vis-a-vis God. It takes a lot of humility. Big shots don't like to look at themselves as being like a child vis-a-vis God. Because what do you mean? I'm a sophisticated and intelligent adult. If it doesn't make sense to me, it must not make sense.
What if it's like asking for something? I know the Holocaust is like a big example. Yeah. But like, God told us not to murder. Like, we know that those things are wrong. So we know it's a valid ask to come and save us. So like, why?
It's a valid ask. There's no question. The question,
but like, it can't be like a 5-year-old, because if we understand in that particular situation, because we're following what God told us.
Well, we know that there are some exceptions to when murder is acceptable. Like when we talked about the pursuer, so maybe there are other exceptions that we don't know about. I mean,
but I don't even know.
But like, how can you argue that?
Well, I know it's.
But you don't even have to go that way. The reason we're still children is because as long as there are, can everyone here agree that we don't know everything?
Yes, sure.
That there are factors out there when we pray for something that's so legit. God forbid somebody's ill and they're such a good person. And there is it possible that there's some reason why, for whatever reason, God is choosing not to intervene and save this person's life? Could there be some reason that you and I are not privy to why this person unfortunately has to go through this terrible suffering? By the way, I would never share this with a person going through suffering or with any of their friends or relatives. I'm just speaking freely here. As long as God knows things we don't, just like a parent does that a child doesn't, and God is privy to a whole reality that we're just unfortunately not aware of. We don't even know it exists, let alone what it is. So that's how I maintain my faith. You know, when I was praying for my mother when she was terribly ill, you know, and I used to talk to her about it, and she was a big believer, and she was difficult, obviously, but she just believed that there was a bigger plan. This is easier said than done, but we're simply not privy to the whole plan. And it's hard for us to accept that, because especially as science and technology marches on, and we seem to be able to answer more and more questions, save more and more lives, come up with more cures for disease, we get a little arrogant in thinking that we know it all. And that's what Shabbos is about. And that's what the second reason of the Exodus is. Acknowledging is this belief that unlike the watchmaker who creates and leaves, God remains actively involved in creation. And as I say, you know, most people in the West do believe in God of creation. As technology advances, we can control more of our environment. We're more likely to overlook God and his vital role in the world. So what do we do once a week? We pull back and we realize something crazy. The world kept going. What if every human being kept a Shabbos? Not just 1/5 of 1% of the world population, Jews. 15 million Jews kept Shabbos. What if all 8 billion people in the world kept Shabbos? Would the world stop functioning? The world would continue to function. It's arrogance to believe that we are the end-all and be-all of all creation. And I think that's why, this is precisely why we cease from work on Shabbos. And what are we really ceasing from? Not work in the general sense of exertion of labor, because personally, I exert a lot of labor on Shabbos, a lot of effort. Saturday night comes around, I take a nap. Saturday night, I'm exhausted from schlepping chairs and hosting people at our home and running the minion here. And but how have I not worked? Because I haven't created. I haven't manipulated the physical world to actually create something anew. That's what's forbidden on Shabbat. And we refrain from doing that to sort of turn the world back to God, because what we have one job, the Jewish people. The Jewish people are supposed to be witnesses. We're supposed to be testifying that God, that there is a God in the world. Can't see him, can't hear him, can't experience him with any of the senses, but he's there. That's why there's a tradition to stand when you hear the Kiddush Friday night. Why do we stand, at least for the first paragraph of Kiddush? Because what's the Kiddush? And God finished creating, and 6 days he was this, and da da da. We stand. Why do we stand? Because if you come into a Jewish court of law to give testimony, a witness in a Jewish court of law always stands. That's why we stand, because we are witnesses and giving testimony that there's a God, and B, that that God intervenes in the world. So that's the second idea. The first idea we discussed tonight was bridging the physical and the spiritual, having that true rest between the physical and the spiritual. The second idea we're now sharing is that it's not enough to believe in a God of creation, but we believe in a God of history. And the way we acknowledge that is by remembering the Exodus, the first time that God answered the pleas of a victimized people. We were crying out to God. God came to our assistance. He came to our help. And he took us out of Egypt, gave us the Torah, and made us into this nation. Okay, so these are basic ideas of Shabbos. Questions, comments, please.
Harry has a question.
Oh, we'll take Harry, and then, yeah, go for it, Harry.
Sure. So I thought that this one had been asked, but I'm happy to repeat the question of intervention and whether murder is wrong. I put something in there about God for a long time, and we don't consider it necessarily.
That is correct. I mean, it's not so relevant to our Shabbos conversation, but we could spend more time on murder if you would like. But yeah, I mean, the question is, if you believe in objective morality, then yeah, God gets, you know, as long as it's not a person coming up with a definition of justifiable homicide, and it's God, you know, whether it's, you know, self-defense or third-party self-defense, like we spoke about with the Rodef situation, that's the way I would understand it. God gets to make those decisions because he's above humanity. He's above mankind.
He doesn't need a
rhetoric
exception.
No. And, right. I mean, now, it would be nice for us to understand why God, you know, becomes wrathful or kills somebody. And we struggle with those things because we don't always know. Does anybody know an episode in the Torah where God literally strikes down two people for doing something that doesn't seem like... What was that? Aaron's two sons. Right, Nadav and Avihu, they came into the tabernacle and they offered a strange fire, and they were supposed to be very holy people, and then zap! They got. So the Torah doesn't tell us why. There are 14 reasons offered in the writings of the sages. Some say that they entered the sanctuary in an inebriated state. Some say they paskened the Shiloh before Moshe and they didn't ask him. They creating their own religion. There are all sorts of theories, but the Torah doesn't tell us. But we don't question God because, again, it goes back to this. I don't know why I'm looking at you, Rebecca, but it goes back to the same thing that. No, I'm sorry. No, because I was just talking to you about this a minute ago. If you think that God has access to some other wisdom that we don't, so then obviously, you know, God has a certain leeway with it all. But let's stay on the focus, stay on Shabbos.
We have a question.
Question, yeah.
Yeah.
Boris.
So with respect to the whole idea of imperfect knowledge that we don't know everything that's going on, and so we can't attribute judgment or reason to why certain things happen.
Well, I don't say we shouldn't try to figure it out.
We can't do something like this.
Yeah, I think we should actually try. Some people would advocate blind faith. I'm not a big fan of that. I think, you know, it wouldn't work for me personally. But I think at some point there has to be a certain humility of like... Yeah, but go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, the example you gave of a five-year-old, I like candy, I want candy, you have candy, you're not giving it to me, therefore you're evil. Well, judgment of evil right there is a judgment based off of limited information.
Right.
So is it possible that in our analysis of certain situations, we come to the conclusion that certain people or certain events or certain groups are evil, but in reality we just don't have the...
I would only apply that to... I mean, that would be very forgiving of you to be able to take something that we use to explain God's actions and use them to explain man's actions. We are supposed to give people the benefit of the doubt and not just assume evil intent or poor, you know, or people are acting not in good faith. But if someone is evil because they cross a certain line, you know, we are not supposed to just always, you know, you have to fight evil, and you can't fight evil if you don't hate evil. So I we'd have to get much more specific. You'd have to give me a real scenario. No, it doesn't say they were supposed to. It says that the Jewish people would be enslaved.
It was
predicted and prophesied by God to Abraham that his descendants would be slaves in a foreign land.
Yeah.
So what did the Egyptians do that was wrong? All they were doing is carrying out God's plan? Is that your question?
Well, I read another statement that their sin wasn't that they were called slaves, that was actually common.
Right. Correct. I would agree with that.
But setting aside the distinction of cruelty for a second.
We have to get back to Shabbos soon, I'm just telling you.
Okay.
Now I by the way, I can show this to you offline. The Ramban, great Nachmanides, asked the question you're asking. He asks the question of why did the Egyptians do anything wrong? If it was predicted and prophesied that the Jewish people would be enslaved, all they were doing was carrying out God's prophecy.
Wasn't that, though, getting the Jews back to Israel? No?
No, the prophecy was that we would be enslaved in a foreign land.
I don't think that was an issue. I think the issue was that he didn't let the Jews leave. Up until then, they didn't have any... They weren't punished by God until Moshe told Pharaoh, "I need you to let my people go."
I mean, they were being treated very cruelly until that point, according to rabbinic tradition.
Well, the Jews were treated cruelly.
Yeah.
But the Egyptians weren't punished until Moshe told...
Oh, okay, maybe. The Egyptians were clearly punished for their wrongdoing, so they clearly did something wrong.
But every time they didn't let the Jews leave, that's when they started getting hit with all...
Technically, yeah. But what Nachmanides answers just quickly is that he said, just because there's a prophecy doesn't mean you have to be the one to fulfill it. You know? Okay, let's go back to this for a minute. Let's go back to Shabbos. I want to mention one other thing. All right, let's jump in now. So we got the reasons and the ideas for Shabbat. What I'd like to do with you is actually take you through a Shabbos. Now that you have some ideology and philosophy, show any other questions about the philosophy of Shabbos? Because that's really what I wanted to. Now I'm going to give you a homework. I would like for you to take this little article home and read it. Okay? It's, has anyone heard of Abraham Heschel?
Yes.
Joshua Heschel. He was a great thinker. He wrote a whole book called The Sabbath. I just photocopied one chapter. It's about time, and basically what he argues is that we focus too much as human beings on space, and we sacrifice our time for space, when it's really supposed to be just the opposite. We're supposed to use our time. We're supposed to use space in order to acquire time, not vice versa. And we become attached to things. Our obsession, he says, with thinginess, with being... with just stuff and accumulating stuff in this world is really what Shabbos is also supposed to try to prevent us from doing. So, can I ask you guys to read this for next week? Is that possible?
Yeah. Is this the beginning of the book?
This is not the beginning. This is not the first chapter.
Are you adding a supplemental chapter?
Okay, cool. I think that
is from your son.
No, that's optional reading. This is required. Yes, please.
Rest between physical and spiritual, but I think Shabbos provides certain a framework to make space for reflection.
Yeah.
And to be introspective. And I don't know if it's like a separate category. I think of it almost like a separate category. It could be part of.
Yeah. I think it's almost like a forced. Did I tell you guys a story about the blackout in Michigan, Detroit?
You told me, but I don't know.
So this I heard this radio talk show host Marianne Williamson. So she has a very interesting lineup. It was one of my rabbis from Yeshiva University, Rabbi Blau, should live and be well, Rabbi Shmuley Botech, and Marianne Williamson were doing a panel on the Sabbath. And she explained why she started keeping Shabbos. And it was very powerful. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, Marianne Williamson. She ran for president for like 10 minutes. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, she was the one that everyone made fun of, but she was very like...
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I'll tell you, she shared this story. She said she was sitting with her daughter, 8-year-old daughter, and she was answering some emails on her laptop. Her daughter was sitting next to her, and like sort of classic, you know, multitasking. The daughter was listening to music. They were both listening to music a little while they were doing their thing. The daughter was playing video games and watching a movie all at the same time.
Sounds cool.
Kids do that. Anyway, they're doing that. They're doing their thing side by side. All of a sudden, everything shuts down. There's a blackout. They're in Detroit. So the little girl gets a little nervous. What are you doing? There's a blackout. It's pitch black. So she lit a candle. She lit a candle. There's nothing they can do. They can't watch the movie. She can't play the video game. She can't answer her emails. Let's just assume she didn't have a phone that was charged. You know. So she just starts talking to her daughter, and the daughter starts talking to her over this like lit candle. 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, 20 minutes. They're just talking, and bam, everything goes back on. And they go right back to their work, you know. Mother goes back to her emails on her laptop. The little girl goes back to her movie, her video games, the music. 5 minutes later, the little girl turns to her mommy and says, "Mommy, do you think we'll ever get that chance again?" And the mother's like, "Chance? What do you mean?" She goes, "Like to talk like that. That was so much fun. We never do that." 8-year-old. And the mother realized for the first time, it was like such an epiphany, that we don't really have these kinds of conversations anymore, because there's something else going on. It's like a little more of an extreme version. I told you guys a lot of stories tonight of like the leech, what's her name, Penelope Leech, about the little boy. But in order to have that, you need a little of a forced blackout. You can't. A lot of people say, "Oh, I'll just do all the positive things of Shabbos," which is great. We'll take whatever we can get, but don't think you're going to get the same thing out of Shabbos. Don't think your kiddush is going to be the same kiddush when your phone is buzzing or someone else is pulling you to over this or doing that. When you know there's nowhere else you can go until Shabbos is out, and there's just like, it's just forced chill time. There's just something very, very powerful about that. So what I want to do with you, I'm going to do it tonight and next week, is I want to take you through a Shabbos. And then afterwards, I'm going to hit the... Hello, Allison. I'm going to hit the melachot, which are the quote-unquote negative or the don'ts of Shabbos. I want to start with the do's, okay? So if you want to open up your packet, please. And what is the first thing we do actually before Shabbos starts to prepare for Shabbos?
Shabbos.
Oh, well, that's interesting. We light candles. That's actually to bring Shabbos in. What do you even do before?
Clean yourself.
You take a shower. I know that sounds ridiculous. I always take a shower. No, you don't always take a shower. Take a shower if you really cut your nails.
Yes.
Okay. By the way, none of these things are requirements. There are suggestions to do what? Okay, take a shower. Keep going. What else? What are the things we do before Shabbos? Put on nice clothing. Cook before Shabbos because you can't cook on Shabbos. Good. What else?
Buy special
things like what?
Flowers.
Food. Prepare. So I want to think now, here's a question. What is wrong, one second, what is wrong, we're all busy people, especially now Friday, Shabbos comes in like before Friday even starts. What happens, what is wrong with just doing that after Shabbos starts? Why can't I just do those things? I'm going to keep Shabbos, but I don't have the time to do Shabbos and prepare for Shabbos before Shabbos starts. I'm really busy. What is the idea? So here's the analogy. I heard this years ago. Imagine a very distinguished, honored guest is invited to your home. He's a U.S. senator. I don't know. Someone that you would maybe look up to. No? That's so sad that you can't see a U.S. senator.
I know U.S. senators. Let's not.
Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Let's say okay.
Oh, yeah. She's no longer alive. Okay. A blessed memory. So she is... She is expected at your home at 7 o'clock, 7 p.m. for dinner. Ruth Bader Ginsburg of blessed memory, the doorbell rings, or she knocks, because she's now a Torah observant Jew. Okay, she knocks on the door, you open up the door. It is such an honor to have you. Have a seat. Just give me a few minutes. I need to put something nicer on.
And shower.
I need to go shower. I need to go clean up. The place is a mess. I'm going to go cook something for you, and she's sitting there. What have you just done? That's a total disrespect, because if you really respected me, you would have prepared for me. Now, I also think psychologically, on a purely behavioral level, and I tell people to do this before they go on dates, is that... I didn't just look at Fred. I tell this to do this because you will feel differently about something that you prepared for. Okay? You will feel differently about something that you prepared for. Okay? So, now, but it's not just for that. So you give honor not only to the Shabbos itself, and we spoke about this, how Shabbat is personified as, you know, as having its own personality. What time is it, by the way? How, are we over already? Okay, we're going to stop in a minute. And how it's got its own personality, but if you want to enjoy it that much more, as I always tell people, like, oh, I went to the prayer service, didn't do it, it didn't do anything for me. If you study about the prayers a little before, you spend a few minutes meditating, it's going to be a different kind of experience. We just show up, right? So that's the first thing we do, and Rabbi Soloveitchik of blessed memory said that, you know what I'm about to say, Austin? You know about this idea? Oh, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
he said that American Jews successfully transplanted Shabbos from Europe to America, but never transplanted Erev Shabbos to America. We don't have the Erev Shabbos. In Israel, they have Erev Shabbos because everyone's off on Friday. Very hard to do Erev Shabbos, especially early Fridays. I'm not beating anyone up. I'm myself guilty of running in last second. But I will tell you, on those rare moments, especially early Fridays, where I did something, I went to the florist, I got flowers, I did a little thing. The Talmud is replete with all these beautiful stories of great serious sages who did a little something in their home before Shabbos to be able to prepare. You're going to feel it that much more. So that's the first thing I'm just going to share. We'll end it with this. But preparing your body, your home, your mind in advance of Shabbat demonstrates also a certain longing and desire, which will help you appreciate it when it arrives. Rabbi Soloveitchik famously said, there can be no holiness without preparation. Holiness requires preparation. That's the first thing. We'll pick up next week, please God, with candle lighting, which is interesting because it has to be done before Shabbos, but it's really done to kind of bring in Shabbos. So we're going to speak about it, dispel a couple of myths about it. We'll talk about the double portion of bread. I'm going to bring you through a whole Shabbos from soup to nuts, beginning to end, and it's going to be unbelievable. I don't want to take any more time away from Allison and what I'm sure is going to be an awesome class. Can we give him like a 2-minute break?
Yeah.
We can do that?
Yeah. Everyone, 2-minute break, come back. We'll definitely start in
awesome. And please join us this Friday night at 6:30, whether you're coming to the dinner or night, we're having a dinner. We're having FNL 6:30, Shabbat morning, 9:30. We really want to encourage everyone, we're all supposed to try to come at least twice a month to MGE on Shabbat for services, the Kiddush, be part of the community. Super, super important. So hope to see you on Shabbat. And I wish you a Shabbat Shalom, even though it's only Wednesday. What's that? So we don't light candles at our FNL because we do it after Shabbos comes in. We only light the candles at FNL when it's like in the spring or summer months.
Oh, okay.
Because you can't really light after sundown.
I was wondering if people are lighting them here at 4.
Oh, you could do that, but we're going to speak a little more about it next week. Because you really should light where you eat, but we'll talk about that. Yes.
You're saying we stand.
Ideally, you could also light where you sleep, but better where you eat, in my opinion.
We stand during Kiddush because in Jewish court of law we rise. And